Hi, this is Myron Bitts, and today I'll be interviewing some of the Occupy Wall Street movement protesters in an unedited format. In order to let them have their unadulterated say, I will interview a diverse cross-section of the occupiers as no one person speaks for all. This is Michael Primo, an occupier and documentarian of the protests. He is but one voice of the movement and does not represent the entire Occupy Wall Street. Can you tell me who you are?
My name is Michael Primo. I'm from Brooklyn, New York, and I'm an artist, activist, organizer, concerned citizen.
Great. And how long have you been down there at Occupy Wall Street?
I've been down at Occupy Wall Street on and off since probably the fourth or fifth day. So it's about going on about 2.5 weeks for me. I don't sleep there. I also work and freelance, so I'm there as much as I can. Sometimes it's all day. Sometimes it's a half day.
Cool. And you do freelance. What do you do?
I produce theater. I produce theater with the Hip Hop Theater Festival. And I also produce radio and audio documentaries with a project called Housing is a Human Right.
Excellent. So, what are most of the people down there that you see? Do they do similar things? Are they documentarians? Are they freelancers? Are they 9-to-5ers?
Yeah, there's a whole diversity of folks down there. Absolutely. I've met people. I met this woman yesterday who is a 43-year-old woman from Tampa, Florida, who formerly worked in the finance industry. And she left her job to work as a freelance consultant and came to New York. She's never been to New York, but she came to New York just to come to see the protests and to see what was going on. She had worked in the finance industry. She personally said she had nothing against the banks or any of the systems, but she said she was just really inspired by the spontaneous nature of the will of the people to peaceably assemble and speak up like this. And she came just to see. And I met her just sitting on a bench, you know.
And what did she say when she finally did see it?
She said she was inspired. Like, I kept asking her, you know, her reactions, how she felt about it. And the one word she kept using over and over again, she was like, I don't really know what to say other than I'm just really inspired. I'm really inspired. Her one concern was there might be freeloaders taking advantage of free food.
Right.
But it's sort of an innocent comment by an innocent bystander.
Sure. When I was down there yesterday and when I met you, I heard actually more than one person talk about that, you know. I said, you know, this looks like it's really has legs and a lot of people from diverse backgrounds. And I heard a few times, you know, yeah, except for the homeless people that have made this their home too, you know. So, but I mean, you know, it's New York and you got to expect that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and it speaks to the sort of complicated nature of New York where, you know, we've gone through generations, well, we'll say a generation of mayors who have done their best to make this place inhospitable for the working poor or the poor, you know. So why not, you know, why not engage everyone?
Right. So how are the people that had 9-to-5 jobs, how are they surviving? I mean, are there donations coming in, or are the pizzerias around? I saw pizza down there when I was there for lunch.
Yeah, the pizza flow is amazing. I've managed to bump into a nice young lady who has a pizza box full of pizza every day around, every evening around 8 or 9, like clockwork. I'm not sure where all the pizza's coming from, but I know that donations are flowing in from all directions. People are mailing things. There's a P.O. box. I don't have the address in front of me, but there's a P.O. box that you can find at the Occupy Wall Street website, if you Google Occupy Wall Street. And that P.O. box has been receiving donations on all scales. A key component, a key tool in the media department and the media committee is these large cell batteries that are like auxiliary powers for laptops, and people have been sending them.
Wow.
There's been solicitations for sleeping bags and other things. People have been donating money. The live stream has been raising money to be able to access supplies. There's a comfort committee, which is seeing to the comfort and health of all the people who are passing through the park as well as camping out in the park. And they are now on a campaign to raise money or solicit donations for, I think it's 200 sleeping bags, warm and snuggly sleeping bags.
Wow. Is there a list of things that you guys need?
There is a list. It's not published at the moment because that list is constantly growing, right. But that can be accessed through the info station in the square. Mm-hmm. And hopefully those things can be published. The idea is to have them published via the website and via Twitter in the coming days.
Great.
I was at the food station getting dinner yesterday, and all of a sudden, like, someone stuck their hand through the line and dropped on a table like a 1 gallon Ziploc bag of sealed chopsticks. You know, like, people are, whatever they can give, they are giving it. It's amazing.
Right. Yeah. So it's all volunteer work, obviously, and nobody's getting paid except for the people making the pizza and the food and stuff.
Yeah. Except for the businesses where those food is coming from, there is no one there who's getting paid. All donations, all money is going to resources to help sustain the movement, obviously to sustain this growing village and community. There are a lot of resources that we need. But yeah, no one's getting paid. It's completely volunteer, you know. And there's people. There was a couple people at General Assembly I met yesterday. A middle-aged gentleman who works a 9-to-5, and he just comes every evening after work. And he joked about how he was finally convincing his wife to come as well. And he lives in Jersey City.
Wow.
You know.
Right on. Yeah. And just today, this morning, there was news about New Jersey getting into the game.
Mm-hmm.
So it's spreading. I mean, can you speak to how it's been spreading and how quickly? I mean, it's been, what, 3 weeks now? 2.5 weeks?
Yeah, it's been 3 weeks. Three weeks this week. And I think one of the shared values amongst the community is this sort of open source, completely democratic engagement that is happening. And because of the open source nature of that, which you could certainly make a strong case for the influence of our sort of modern culture on that value structure. And because of that value structure, it has been, quote unquote, become viral. People, I think that the simple fact that people have occupied this square has unlocked the imagination of individuals and given them permission to dream. And given them permission to dream in a way that they previously haven't been given permission because they haven't seen it. You know, you don't know to dream it if you haven't seen it in a lot of ways.
Right.
You know,
how inspired were they by? I think I know the answer to this, but how inspired were they by the Tahrir Square protests and all the Arab Spring uprisings?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think it's clear that you can't deny the impact of those popular uprisings on the popular imagination that led to this event, you know? Mm-hmm. It was a lot of events, and it's certainly not the first occupation. I've been involved in a few activities that have occupied space around New York, and there's things around the U.S. that have happened where people have occupied space, but nothing like this has sort of, like, really captured that radical imagination, you know? And the Tahrir Square and what was going on in the so-called Arab Spring is no doubt part of that.
Right. So how about just daily life? I mean, I know that I saw a lot of people, and people were pointing me in directions of who to talk to, this and that, but it wasn't anything at all like our leader's right over there, mm-hmm. or, you know, talk to this guy because he knows everything. He knows what's going on and he's coordinating. I mean, it's really still very disorganized, and I mean that in the best way possible, because I think once a movement gets organized, once a movement has their demands, they're sort of locked in, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's very difficult to sort of step back from that and you want to maximize your flexibility in situations like this.
Mm-hmm.
So it's probably the reason that it's still growing, I think, is it works to your advantage to not have these demands. But people didn't know each other's names. I was struck by this. They just pointed, look for a guy in this kind of hat, you know, look for a guy with this Fox News fake camera. You know, things like that, and they hardly knew each other's names. And I'm wondering how that happens. I guess I was walking around, and all I heard were a lot of strangers just talking to each other randomly. It sounded like, you know, what I imagine in Socrates' time, a Greek town square, you know, in Athens, sounded like. Everybody was kind of just playing with their ideas, allowing it to bounce back and forth. But it was very fluid still.
It's exactly that. I mean, this is the realization of the commons. You know, the most idyllic vision of a democratic commons where people are allowed to peaceably assemble to debate the issues that concern them most and find and identify other people who have like-minded feelings and values under this sort of large umbrella of public assembly is being realized in the square. Things are happening so quickly but things are becoming more and more organized as things evolve. But it's exactly that. People are just exercising their right to assemble. They've unplugged from their iPods, ironically, and then they go down there and get on Twitter and let the world know. But for a large percentage of people, they're unplugging from their TVs and from their computers and coming down to engage with other people to then enrich that experience when they return. The fact that a lot of people don't know each other speaks to the sort of how fast things have been growing. There are a lot of people who know each other, and there are a lot of people who come for an hour or a half hour or a day or a half a day and give whatever they can because they are inspired to participate in this commons, you know, in this movement to exercise our democratic rights. And that really speaks to, like, the nature and the values of what's happening down there. Things are evolving, the structure and organization are evolving. I think there's a growth spurt that's occurring right now where there are people that are figuring it out how to organize this particular community. There are a lot of skilled and talented organizers that are as part of the community, as well as everyday average citizens who often have not had the opportunity to participate as leaders. But this situation is showing us that we are all leaders, and all we have to do is participate. It can be a little bit off-putting for some people. I certainly, the first time I came into the square, I was a little off-put, and I've had this critique, especially with other people of color from low-income communities, that there is a degree of first perception that may just think, okay, this is just lifestyle culture on display. You're at, you know, your stereotypical sort of vegan anarchist, quote-unquote, da-da-da-da-da.
The hippies and the Golden Gate Park hobos and
exactly, you know, which can be something to navigate if you're unaware or unused to those particular lifestyles, but on the flip side, because it is a completely inclusive environment, if you have the particular tenacity to find yourself in one of these communities, there's room for everyone, and not even tenacity. Let me retract that and say not even tenacity. But like, if you just spend a little bit of time there and just talk to your neighbor, you'll find your place in the community, and that's what's sort of amazing and beautiful about it.
Yeah, I found them very welcoming. I mean, to everybody, and I know there's a guy named Brendan that was. I heard him on WNYC. He called in, and that's why I went down there yesterday to really start talking to people because. He was talking about including everybody. He was inviting Wall Street bankers down mm-hmm. to the meeting at 2:00 yesterday mm-hmm. For the media and to really focus his message. I mean, maybe you could speak more to that than I can because Brendan was all over the place running security. This man, he's about 6'1", Brooklyn truck driver, and he's really taking a big leadership role, I think, in doing the security. He's working about 14 hours a day, he said, and. He can only drive a truck 10 days a month, and that's his sustenance. So, but yeah. So maybe you can speak about the leadership.
Yeah, the leadership roles are there. Well, how do I say this? The people are leading. There is no leader, and there is no clearly defined leadership, which is a positive in the fact that that leader cannot be taken down. It's a positive in the fact that consensus is developed in order to influence and move forward on basic necessities of the community, as well as the direction of the movement. So there's clear opportunity for anyone who wants to step up to step up and participate. There are certain people that have... I didn't know Brandon before this, but I definitely saw Brandon... at the beginning, like sort of when I first met him there, and he's very different than now, which is great. You know what I mean? It's incredible. And it's incredible to see folks who are sort of like that exercising their rights and finding a place for them to have their voice heard where maybe they've never had their voice heard before, do you know?
I do. And it was funny because the reporters, they're running around just as disorganized as Occupy Wall Street, because they have no idea who to talk to.
Exactly.
It's literally, they have to engage so many people to get one interview that would be acceptable to their network, that they're really getting a good cross-section of people and getting a good sense of it. So, but actually, let's go to that subject a little bit and talk about how the media has portrayed you, what is inaccurate about it, what is accurate about it. I know that it's very diverse. I mean, there is one sort of element that sort of pervades, like we talked about, but they all have different ideas, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And so who are the media that have been there, the Fox Newses and even the NPRs and the Thomson Reuters, from what you've read, what's made you sit back and say, these guys have no clue what's going on?
Well, it's the main thing that's made me sit back and be like, these people have no clue, is the inability for them to grasp the situation, because there's no leadership structure, because there's no clearly defined and articulated hierarchical structure as conceived by our sort of consumerist capitalist culture. They have no idea how to enter it, and it's baffling to them, and that reflects in the reporting. You know, I read some of the conservative blogs sometimes, because I think it's really interesting to read how it's painted, and it's a really great media analysis. You know, and Fox News and Rush Limbaugh were reporting these stories about the protesters' demands, but we've made no demands. You know,
right? They're all on the website. There's a lot of what I've read. There's a lot of people putting their demands up for scrutiny, mm-hmm. on the forums, mm-hmm. of Occupy Wall Street. Is that right?
Exactly. They're putting forward ideas in a democratic way. And the digital forums mirror the General Assembly forums, if not in the structure of how the conversation is facilitated, but in the way that the ideas are allowed to surface and bubble and be commented on and discussed. But there is a certain segment of the media that hasn't been down there, certainly hasn't been down there before two Saturdays ago when the first arrests, maybe weren't down there before the second arrest on the Brooklyn Bridge, but now many of them are definitely down there. There was a great example, I think, that typifies all the media that has been coming out, is a news piece that was on WNYC this morning, and the report was all about how the protest is costing the NYPD lots of money for the overtime for all the officers, money that the city doesn't have, and how the NYPD is speaking with the owners of Zuccotti Park to figure out ways to evict the protesters, because Zuccotti Park owners say they are not using, you know, there's tents everywhere and blah, 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 right? But there was not one single mention or conversation about the protesters, or from the perspective of the protesters. There was one comment, and that comment was, and leaders of the protest movement say that they are staying indefinitely. And that was the only voice in that whole reporting. And this is a network that claims that it is the sort of objective, unbiased perspective, and is part of the so-called liberal media.
Right. And what do you see as the barrier to them being able to report on it objectively or more objectively?
Having worked in journalism and in a radio news environment, there is the one part of it is the time crunch, or this is what they would say. They would say there's the time crunch is too much, and B, there's no leaders. Who do we talk to?
Right.
Right? The simple fact that they can only talk to leaders speaks to one of the key values that many people that are a part of this movement are trying to counter. We are the 99%. 1% of America does not speak for us. We are the 99%, and you must engage us and engage us directly so that we can tell our story. And my story, and I only speak for myself. I do not speak for everyone by any stretch of the imagination. And therein is the point.
Can't ask for more, so why unfulfilled? We take apart everything we build. Had it right here, now it's gone.
If you're just tuning in, this is Myron Bitz doing an exclusive long-form interview with Michael Primo of the Occupy Wall Street movement. Actually, this 99% thing, I want to know a little bit more about it. Who is the 99%? I mean, besides everybody but, is it everybody but the super rich 1%? Is that, that's where it emanates from?
I would argue that the 1%, or that the 99% is the teachers, it's the workers. But it could be members of the super wealthy who are concerned, you know? Like arguably someone like Russell Simmons, who you could equally argue that he's part of the problem, and you could equally argue that he's followed a path that he knew how to follow, and he's done what was prescripted for him, and he has been incredibly supportive of this movement, and he has directed resources
from the beginning.
From the beginning, resources and support, right? And so, you know, you could argue that he's part of the 1% because he is, you know, at $380 million net worth, is one of the richest folks in America. He's probably, he's not wealthy, right? He's rich. And let's be clear that there's...
I think he's super rich.
He's super rich, yes. He's super rich.
Isn't that his book?
Yeah. Exactly. But let's make the distinction between rich and wealthy. Like, he's a self-made individual. He's not part of the wealthy class of America, which is generational wealth.
He produces things. I mean, yes. He doesn't just push papers around. And,
exactly, yeah. Exactly. But I say all this to say that the 99% are the people that feel like their voice is no longer represented within the mainstream popular apparatus that dictates and speaks for America. The 99% are the people who do not feel like their voice is represented fully in government. They don't feel like, they feel like their elected leaders, once elected, speak for the people who paid for them to be elected, not the people that that voted for them. You know, the 99% is the people who believe that everyone should have a voice, you know?
Right. So on that note, have you talked to anybody that's been nervous, or are you yourself nervous about the message being co-opted? I saw when I was down there when they called a meeting, Michael Moore showed up, and all of a sudden it was a whole different. I mean, when the reporters were standing around before Michael Moore showed up, at that point they were crowding into the media center. The security was, you know, having a fit trying to get them out, you know, this and that. So Michael Moore shows up, and then suddenly he's the face for 10 minutes or so. You know, he gets his face on camera and then just leaves. I mean, he's not there protesting, right? Mm-hmm. How does everybody feel about that? Because to me, I think I would be a little, like, offended. I mean, at the same time that you don't have a leader, per se, or a face of the movement right now, it seems to me you don't want one person to have that sort of, you know, to speak for you as well.
Yeah, it's a challenge. It's absolutely a challenge. And I'll preface that by saying, following up on the question about the media coverage that I think is interesting, is the fact that there was a media storm speaks to the fact that how much media has shown up since Saturday, since the Brooklyn Bridge incident, right. Which is really kind of amazing. But what's interesting is the only people that were there late at night, I was there till like 2 o'clock a couple nights this week.
Two in the morning.
Yeah, I don't remember what's today, Thursday?
Today is Wednesday.
Wednesday, right. So it was Monday night. And there was a Korean crew and a Japanese crew just kind of wandering around and hanging out in the park doing these atmospheric pieces about the activities of what was going on. And I introduced them to people that were at sort of doing the comfort station and people doing the medical station, and they did this piece where they were touring. They literally toured the grounds, you know. And I obviously can't access Japanese television unless it's streaming. I haven't figured out how to access it yet. But I imagine that coverage is very different than the American coverage, just based on the rapport of the reporter and his crew and what he was interested in covering. So it was interesting when the sort of American celebrity culture sort of pops up. Not to say that Japanese is not part of a celebrity culture either, but when the American celebrity pops up, there was just like this storm of like locusts that just like gravitated around, you know? And it was really interesting to see everyone perform. Like the theater was fascinating, you know? Like everyone was performing for this event, right. You know, this 30-second soundbite event. And part of that is our celebrity culture. Part of that also speaks to the need for the media to glom on to something recognizable, like Michael Moore. They know who that is. They can see him, blah, 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 blah. But it is a big challenge for us, and it's a challenge that internally has been much discussed, and we're developing strategies to deal with in order to counter that narrative and put out the narrative of the 99% represented in the park. And there is an amazing, robust squad of media that has sort of gathered within the community. We're still looking for people who are interested in contributing their skills as photographers or videographers or editors or coordinators or producers, and we're also looking for people who have shot stuff in the park to contribute to the community, and we're trying to develop the capacity to have a post-production workflow. We're currently looking for a space that will be able to produce content to be able to tell our own narrative to counter this public popular media narrative that's happening.
So tell people how they can get involved. They can just go down. What I did, I went down there and I just asked somebody, "Where's the media center?" And she said, "Look for right in the center of the park. Look for a ragtag group of kids with laptops."
Exactly. That's the GPS coordinates right there, you know. And if you're interested in participating in any way in that capacity, please come down to the media center and just speak to anyone in that center and just let them know that you're interested in contributing and participating. And if you happen to be in the park or in the square or participate in any of the marches or events that are happening, and you'd like to contribute even just your footage, go down to that media center and ask to speak to the post-production person, and we'll have someone, especially today, ingesting footage of people that want to contribute.
Actually, can you go through sort of the people and actually the main roles that those people have there? I didn't get to meet all of them because they were super busy, especially with more coming. Mm-hmm. But what are their roles, and what's the core of the media center there?
The core of the media center, I would say, is divided into two general functions. How do I say this? All the media coming out of the park comes from a variety of different little subcommittees, we'll call them. But the core media is divided into the live stream, which is engages with social media and keeping the sort of live stream that is going.
So the Twitter and Facebook as well?
Yep, Twitter, Facebook, and there's this video feed that streams live on the internet, keeping that live and keeping that going. And there's two cameras for that going that are sort of edited and are not edited, but are recorded and logged and sometimes switch between cameras. And there's a crew to keep that process going. And then there's a production crew, which deals with the internal and external production. And so what that means is dealing with all the photos, all the video that's produced within the park or around in the movement, we'll say. And that includes creating a daily dispatch. And the daily dispatch is a video segment that's a few minutes long. That's sort of a video diary of what happened that day. Mm. And then there's also a newspaper.
Occupy Wall Street Journal.
Exactly, the Occupy Wall Street Journal. The first issue is out. I believe there is the first issue has a circulation of 80,000.
Wow.
Hopefully that will grow.
How are you pressing this?
I don't know the details. The editor found a press in Queens that's pressing it. A group of people who are committed, who are journalists, print journalists, and committed to telling the people's story, went out and fundraised a little bit for the printing costs and asked journalists to contribute their analysis and reports. And it's a full page. It's not a broadsheet, so it's not like the Post. It's more like a New York Times, Wall Street Journal size. And it's now 1, 2, 3, 4 pages in size. I don't know what the timeline is for the next one, but I know they're looking for journalists and contributors. I spoke to two young folks, not young folks at all, actually. They were twice my age, but two gentlemen yesterday who were young at heart who are interested in contributing to the paper.
And I saw some politicians there, and I know that you guys have been getting some lawyer support mm-hmm. for some of the people that were arrested. Is there a lot of that? Are there people just walking up and being like, "Hey, I know the law. I can help you with this and that." It's literally just that, people coming through and
Yeah, absolutely. There's a legal committee. So the organization of the park is around, or of the movement is organized into committees, and there are committees that cover sort of every aspect of life in the movement, from legal to, as I mentioned, comfort, which is a day-to-day life, medical, food, sanitation, media, direct action, outreach, on and on and on. There's sacred spaces for people who have particular religious beliefs or spiritual beliefs that would like to have a little space to be able to observe their beliefs within the movement and within the square, the occupation. Hmm. And there's a legal committee, which is, from what I know, is a lot of members from the National Lawyers Guild, the volunteer lawyers from the National Lawyer Guild who are volunteering their time.
Great. And has the ACLU reached out? Do you know?
I don't know. I can't speak to that.
Okay. And I guess one final question. Where do you see it going? I know it's going to be a huge question, and it's all up in the air right now. But once it coalesces, which I think is going to happen after today, when the unions start joining up, and when it's going to get pretty big, I think, there's going to be, a couple marches today?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Where do you see it going after that? I mean, how do you see everybody in each city with the Occupy Together movement coalescing and really forming a consensus, or do you see a consensus ever forming on what the demands are or what they want to see?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that's a question that's on everyone's mind. I only see it growing and getting bigger as these things sprout up in every town in America, it seems, you know. And I don't necessarily see a consensus being reached around demands, and I see a lot of value in never necessarily articulating one or two demands. You know, I think it's more about an exercise of democratic principles and consensus making and the ability to come together to say that we are not represented. And from that, I think from chaos always emerges some degree of logic and some degree of order. And we'll just have to wait to see what that is.
And that we will. Okay, thank you very much, Michael. If people want to see your documentary, we watched a little bit of it earlier. Where can they go to see that?
Oh, sure.
It's not about Occupy Wall Street, but it's...
Yeah, I have a project called Housing is a Human Right, which we create a space for people that are struggling to maintain or obtain home, however they define home to be, to share their stories. And we create audio documentaries and multimedia pieces for the internet and interactive installations in unconventional spaces. And you can check that out at housingisahumanright.org.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Stay tuned to Progressive Radio Network with updates all day, live from the protests featuring Michael and others down there.